Communication breakdown. Pause for the message, wake up. Every station is a gentrification. Global syndication is the shaping of the nation. But do we even know who plants the seed? You think the media works for you, but it's a job for them. They're just selling fruit.
The other side of the news.
Ignorance grows on the spirit like a tumor. Till freedom is a rumor.
There is something very wrong with our Western society. The ideals most of us hold, that we in North America are a better society, a more democratic society, are beginning to be undermined by Wall Street, the Toronto Stock Exchange, and the power of the corporation. Their control of our society has repeatedly become visible. Still, the government bodies are approaching the demand for justice, jobs, and fair trade with the same economic approach that has slithered all across the United States and Canada. Policies that are made by the corporation mindset that continued growth is the only solution to every problem. There are many documentary films now that expose the total failure of a fair democratic society, that blatantly show that it is money that controls who lives and who dies. From Katrina's disaster to the continued environmental destruction driven by the heart of greed, our capitalist economic system is calling the shots, making the policy decisions that marginalize anyone without enough wealth to survive. Here is a series of clips from The New News, the independent documentaries. This clip is from Trouble the Water. Details what really happened during Katrina.
My name is Scott Michael Roberts. This is my wife Kimberly Roberts. We're from New Orleans, the Ninth Ward, underwater.
We get inside of the hurricane from the viewpoint of two street hustlers. The film starts the day before the storm, where rap artist Kimberly River Roberts points her camera on herself and the Ninth Ward.
Mississippi, so we might get the outskirts.
And the sky, it look pretty nice, but it sure soon will change.
Girl, I hear some thunder.
Golly, look at that water, boy. Ooh, Lord.
Dog, you see how hot it is?
They are the poor with no means to leave the city.
Who be with us, Lord, please?
All this water coming through the windows.
Hey, help us get off the roof, man. You're a real hero, boy.
We under siege, truly under siege. Everybody done lost everything around here.
Now, you have seen what Katrina has done to us. She stuck us in her attic. I'm running out of juice, too.
This is one of the Navy bases that Bush had planned to close down.
Why can't we stay overnight?
What about the women and children?
They said, get off our property or we're going to start shooting.
We don't need you out here if you try to trouble the water.
I don't want to raise your expectations too high.
Continue to listen to the local authorities.
It's our home, our food, our neighbors, our problem. That's where I want to be at.
That's the type of stuff you see in third world countries. This is America. It shouldn't be happening here.
Treat us like we was un-American, like we lost our citizenship.
They cannot say that they did not have the means. Our government is supposed to be one of the greatest, but it's proven to me that, hey, if you don't have money, you don't have status, you don't have a government. My son wanted to join the army. I'll be damned if he does. No way. You're gonna go to college. Even if I have to wash somebody's floors to make sure you go. You are going to college. You're not gonna fight for a country that does not give a damn for you. No way.
Katrina is still going on.
Night walk.
People living in poverty are going to feel effects even more with climate change, because climate change is bringing us more torrential downpours. It's also bringing us drought, which means we need more fresh water, and we're running out. We're running out for a number of reasons. Drought is just one of them. Also, because there is too much water coming down in a rainfall, it overwhelms the infrastructure. In the United States and Canada, most of the infrastructure is 80 to 100 years old. A lot of it has been overlooked in favor of expressways in our city in Hamilton, residential development, and pipeline development. We found this in Hamilton every time there's a thunderstorm in the summer. Certain low-lying areas are overwhelmed. There's too much water rushing too fast, and the sewer system is too old to take care of all this excess water. That also corrupts and floods our drinking water, fouled, polluted by over-surface running water that picks up tar, oil, anything in its path before it ends up in Lake Ontario. This is happening all over North America. We aren't exclusive in Hamilton. Insurance companies are refusing to honor homeowners that have had flood insurance coverage once before. Insurance companies are in the business to make money. If everybody is applying for flood rebates once or twice a year, then the insurance companies are going to start to refuse customers. The people that pay the most are those that live in poverty once again. Here's a clip from another documentary that talks about infrastructure in America.
While 90% of the United States have clean drinking water, poor infrastructure and groundwater pollution threaten the remaining 10%.
We have a huge infrastructure problem in this country. There are between 250,000 and 300,000 water main breaks a year.
In some cases, that has created these massive sinkholes that have swallowed trucks and cars. We are living on borrowed time as far as our infrastructure is concerned. For most of America, the water and sewer infrastructure goes back decades, if not more than a century. We have 72,000 miles of pipe and water main that is over 80 years of age. And in some communities, this is brick or even wood. Most of the water infrastructure to this point has been in good enough shape that people take it for granted, and then they end up doing things like purchasing bottled water. They deal with Band-Aids rather than a systematic effort to try and clean up our rivers, provide supply, and be able to deal with the future. During the Carter administration, 78% of the clean water resources were provided by the federal government. Last year, it was about 3%. Less money, less oversight, less attention. It's a ticking time bomb.
Because the government has cut so much of the infrastructure budget, many have argued that we should let private companies come in to fix the problem.
That's an argument for the government to invest in public infrastructure. It's not an argument to privatize water systems. I mean, government has certain purposes that are fundamental to the practical aspirations of people. Government has an obligation to make sure that there's air fit to breathe, water fit to drink, and a public purpose of government is confirmed through government protecting people's right to have access to water. Water is a basic human right. It's necessary for the survival of life on the planet. When you start commodifying the necessities of life in such a way as to make it more difficult for people to gain access to those necessities, you have the basis for serious political instability.
From Katrina, we go to the Hamilton Labor Day Parade. Hamilton is known by two things: their manufacturing and industrial jobs, and Labor Day. Labor Day, where they have the huge parade with all the unions, this year was a little different. There was a lot more community groups involved with the parade. And when I went asking them what were their views on our current economic situation, how could we change economic policy, I got an earful of something I wasn't ready for: anti-American. To ask is, what do you think about our current economy, the way that we've done things so far for the last 100 years, and where we've ended up with it?
Okay, Bill Ferguson, President of the United Steelworkers of America, Local 8782. I think that we've taken a huge step back in the last little while. The government has held a for sale sign out on Canada. We have foreign companies coming in and buying whose best interests aren't the interests of Canada. I think what we have to do is we have to take back control again of the economic agenda. I believe that the Americans, Brazilians, no matter who they be, they'll look at this country as being a secondary source of either production or material, and that we'll be subject to the whim of a foreign government without any control whatsoever. We have to have a Canadian industrial policy, and we have to have an Investment Canada Act that serves the best interest of workers, not the best interest of industry.
How can we do that right now when we've heard about Obama, of course, has said that he wants to make sure that Buy American And, you know, I see all these tar sand pipelines running across Canada and into the States, and nobody seems to even know that they exist.
Talk about it. That's the thing. We have to get the message to the street, and that's what we have to. We have to make sure that people understand that this is a nationalist issue, and it is exactly that, a nationalist issue. We have to make sure that people understand that by these foreign companies coming in, they're coming in to employ their people, the best interests of their nation. We have to make this an issue, and it has to be in the forefront.
What would you say to an American? I mean, this is Labor Day here. We're celebrating basically unemployment in Canada.
Yes. And the thing is too, you know, your American brothers and sisters who work in the labor movement and who work for a living, we find a lot of commonality with them. But what they have to recognize, too, is the behavior of corporate America outside of America doesn't win particularly any favors to anybody in the United States. It doesn't give the profile that I think the working people of the United States deserve. But corporations, big American corporations, really do have very little concern for the Canadian people. They do believe this to be a third world country, and they treat us accordingly. And I think that until such time as our government recognizes that there is an issue and that they act on it, we have to keep on spreading the word that this is what's happening and they have to recognize it. And I understand the fresh water situation and the pipeline situation. My brother-in-law is actually working on the pipeline, laying Indian pipe, and also getting scalp from the United States to complete it. And that this Buy American is a free trade is now Buy American, and they're putting it on us while they're unemploying our people. We know that steel is coming from the United States to supply both GM and Chrysler. Those are companies now owned by the Canadian people, or a large portion is owned by the Canadian people. And the people of Canada should know that they are doing everything to re-employ the beleaguered American steel industry by supplying those companies that are federally owned with American-made steel. The Canadian steelworkers are currently being locked out and put out on the street. And why? Because the sourcing is coming from Gary, Indiana, as opposed to Hamilton or Nanticoke, Ontario.
What would you like to see politicians do?
I think the politicians have the power and the will to make these companies toe the line. They're either going to be part of the Canadian industrial establishment or they're not. And if they're not, the Canada Investment or the Investment Canada Act should have penalties against those who decide they're going to buy our industries just to shut them down or take our order books. That's not fair trade. That's free trade. It is not fair trade.
What about the banks being bought?
We should have our own industrial establishment, and Canadian banks are fairly strong, but Canadian banks, the problem is there is no nationalism in business in this country. It's a Canadian businessman is an international businessman. You don't see this happening in Germany. You don't see it happening in Sweden. Canadians have to start pulling together as a nation. We got to be able to have a national policy. We've got to be able to go forward and build a country. It's going to be nation building as opposed to nation wrecking, because the law as it stands right now encourages nation wrecking, because large corporations don't follow the law anyway. They get away with as much as they possibly can. The government should be stepping forward in the best interest of the people who put it in power, not in the best interest of the American corporate structure.
So you don't think Stephen Harper is actually doing the job he was elected to do?
No.
What about the possibility of a fall election?
I think that the fall election is going to get everybody on their best behavior, and now is the time to push our point. I would like to force the agenda on the Stelco situation, the U.S. steel situation, take it to the forefront, and we intend that during this election that the workers at Lake Erie will be pushing that agenda. We will be out speaking. We will be out moving around to different political rallies, and we will be bringing up the issue. We are, as workers, going to put this on the forefront.
Okay, thanks, Bill.
You're welcome.
Jobs have disappeared. Those that are left blame the capitalist economy and the corporations that now control the government.
My name is Jim Chambers. I am a gallery owner on James Street North called James North Studio. And today I'm working with Workers' Arts and Heritage Museum. We still are very much a class system here in terms of the amount of wealth that's in very few hands relative to the amount of wealth that in the trickle-down kind of process. I think we're also a society in transition, so the traditional jobs that my parents had as in a working-class system kids are not going into that as much, into the trades and so on. I'm a community college teacher and in media, and I sometimes wonder where all these kids are going to go. The number of graduates we're ending up with an incredibly educated younger class who about two-thirds of them don't have a chance in hell of getting a job in the thing that they're graduating in.
I mean, why do you think it's become this way?
Well, we've gone from an industrial society into a technology-based society. And, that whole society that I grew up in, my dad worked in the American Can Company, all my uncles worked in Stelco, those jobs don't exist anymore. There's no way that Canada can compete with China or the former Soviet Union as far as the kind of industry that we traditionally have done. So our students have to be trained to be more in technology, but again, as a teacher, it's disappointing to me to the number of kids who can actually get jobs in the professions that they are educated in.
We have a global economy that's failed us. Should we go back to Main Street? Should we go back to a local economy?
I don't know if that it can ever go back. Unfortunately, because the economy is controlled by about a few multinationals. You know, when you think you're buying stuff from one company and you discover that it's all the same company, like Future Shop, Best Buy is owned by Future Shop, and they're supposedly competing against each other, but they're not.
You must have heard of global climate change and the shortage coming for power and electricity. What do you think about all that?
Well, I think that one of the things that we're really missing the boat on, that countries like Sweden and Holland and so on, is the use of alternative energy sources. I just got back actually from my honeymoon, and we went down along the shore of Lake Erie, and there are hundreds and hundreds of wind turbines set up. Same thing when we went into PEI last year. All these wind turbines were set up, and then we started to talk to the locals, and they said, well, only 5% of that energy comes to us. All the rest goes to the United States. So there's a great inequity. There's a great inequity in North America with the so-called North America free trade. The free trade only exists really for the Americans. The Canadians and the Mexicans take a hit. My son-in-law is Mexican. I've been down there. I know what the people can and can't afford, and there is no equity in North America, that's for sure. The giant winner of the whole system is the United States.
What would you say to an American? What would you want them to know about Canada and Canadians?
That's a hard question. I would just... that they're not, first of all, the police force of the world. They are not the only people on the planet. I mean, I like Americans. I have lots and lots of friends in the United States, and Americans generally are great, but they're extremely self-centered. You know, self-centered, and their politics encourage that, and their sense of right to things. You know, if they don't like the way some government's working in some country, they feel they have the right to go and change that. The overzealous past history of anti-communism and so on is just ridiculous. You know, that whole McCarthy era and so on. And it was just part of this sense of rightness. You know, we have the right to do this, and if you don't like it, we're going to, you know, blow you up.
How is their economy different from our economy right now?
Well, if you read the statistics, our economy is actually better than their economy. I think they have a lesser educated, in many ways, working class people who are kind of doomed to sort of mick jobs, as they've become known. Because there is a lot of poverty in the United States, and even the recent Obama initiative to try to create health care it just shocks me how opposed people are to that, because they're ignorant. They're ignorant of what it's about. And that is one of the problems with the Americans, is they don't seem to be interested in finding out about other people and how things operate. They just assume that their way is the best way, and
they don't know about Canadians. And,
not really,
and
no.
And we're giving our resources to them, and there's a lot
of
things.
We're giving our water, we're giving our electricity, and if they get to a desperate state, they'll just take it. If they, I think they will, yeah. If it's them or us, it'll be them, because they have more power, more might, more guns, and if they. If we don't share our water with them, then they'll just take it.
But they're polluting the water. Right now, Canada is polluting our fresh water with the tar sands deals, with all the pipelines going
in. Oh, yeah. No, the tar sands are are probably the premier ecological disaster that's going on at this point. And part of it is the incredible lobby, sort of the last gasp, I think, of the oil industry, you know, fueled certainly by the last American administration who, you know, let's face it, they're in bed with the oil companies and they're trying to get the last penny out of this kind of archaic system that's successively destroyed the planet in about 120 years.
The last hope that the masses will stand up and take back democracy comes from the arts community. Music and art has always been the voice of society.
Barbara Milne, Art Bus, The Pearl Company.
All right, so let's ask, should we change our current economic system?
Obviously we should, but I'm not at all sure we have the foggiest notion how to. I don't think the people who are running the big money systems have any idea how to control what's happening on the internet. You know, and these are huge. I mean, this is a massive change, like the Industrial Revolution. And where do we go with it? I'm beyond me. You know, I want to see the arts do better. I want to see people more open to the arts. I want to see more support for the arts coming from the various levels of government. But at the same time, I want to see the arts be able to be self-sustaining. It'd be nice not to have to rely on government money. But where needed, you know, the arts make such a difference in so many people's lives.
In what way? Give me an example.
I just did the Living Rock at the Pearl Company. We just did the Living Rock Arts of August show. And to see those kids and the sense of accomplishment that came from the art that they'd done that was up on the wall in an art gallery was really inspiring.
And what is the Living Rock?
Living Rock is it's a wonderful organization, a downtown organization dedicated to helping kids who are challenged in many, many ways. Some of them are street kids, some of them are into drugs, some of them are just trying to find themselves and have no idea where to start. And they really help give them a start. So, this is one of their, I think we were the fourth. This was the fourth annual, so every summer they do this for these kids. And they have challenges finding the money to do it.
These are homeless kids, right? Homeless teens?
A lot of them are. Not all. Some of them are, you know, just having a very hard time figuring out who they are. But, or heavily into drugs. And you can see all the kids that they've kind of picked up and put back on their feet.
As was mentioned earlier, this Labor Day parade had a lot more community groups involved. One of them was Environment Hamilton. We asked Don McLean some of his thoughts on the economy. Unfortunately, in this clip, he had to compete with the bugs that come with the end of summer.
My name is Don McLean. I work with Environment Hamilton, a nonprofit organization in Hamilton, Ontario, working for environmental improvements. I think that the economic system we have is a disaster. It's a system which continuously encourages us to consume more, and the planet simply can't handle that. The planet can't handle what we're doing now. The deterioration that's taking place is incredibly scary, and we have to change, and change dramatically. And at the center of that, I think, is probably something called curtailment and community. A reduction in our footprint, our use of the planet, our use of resources, a shift towards life that's focused around learning,
life is focused around culture and those kinds of activities, and is not focused around buying things. A shift away from houses that have four bathrooms, a shift away from houses that have even two bathrooms. We need to go back down very fast if we're going to get to a point where the planet can continue to accommodate human civilization. Otherwise, we're going to see, we're imposing a disaster on our kids and our grandkids.
How did we get into this situation?
We got into it with an economic system which only functions on the basis of growth.
Right, constantly.
And the only thing that grows in nature uncontrollably is cancer. And that's the kind of situation that we've created in terms of our economic system. We have to change that economic system. We have to change what it is that drives that so that there is no longer an incentive to greed, which has driven us. We need an incentive for community. We need an incentive for the positive things in life, treating each other well, accommodating ourselves to each other, and living with as little off the planet as we can.
What kind of policies do you think should change, and what kind of policies are just not working?
Well, short-term kinds of policies that can change. We need a tax on the all of the stock transactions and derivatives and financial transactions. So every transaction should have a tax on it. Because we have transactions taking place every few minutes with the same stocks being flipped back and forth. And there should be a tax every time that happens, and it will stop happening. That would be a simple step to take. That's called a Tobin tax.
So what are you working on right now?
I'm working right now on a global day of action on climate change on October 24th to direct our decision makers to work for a lower amount of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere than we have now. So that target that we're asking for is 350 parts per million. Currently we're at 390 parts per million. And at 390, we're seeing the Arctic melting. We're seeing glaciers going everywhere in the world, which is going to threaten the water supplies for a billion people. We're seeing massive droughts in various parts of the world, California, Texas, the southeastern United States, Australia in desperate straits, huge forest fires breaking out in BC, fires in California and so on. We're seeing in our area in Hamilton incredible rainstorms that are flooding the place. On a frequent basis, we had 5,000 homes flooded this summer from a rainstorm. This kind of change in our climate is a disaster for us, and we need to back off from what we've done to the planet. It means we have to reduce the total amount that's in the atmosphere already, which means we have to dramatically reduce the amount we're putting into the atmosphere.
So the tar sands would be something that should be changed immediately.
The biggest new source of greenhouse gas emissions, pollution to the atmosphere at this point in Canada, is coming from the tar sands. And the idea that we should continue to consume oil is simply folly. It can't continue.
What do you have to say about all the pipelines that are going across Canada and down into the States? Hillary Clinton just signed the official okay for the Alberta Clipper to go ahead, and now Murphy Oil on Lake Superior is stopped looking at greening themselves and looked at expanding themselves, which will increase the tar sands production and output more than fivefold. What do you say to the American people about how Canada looks at this?
There's lots of Canadians who think the tar sands should not be developed at all. The only way that we're going to actually deal with our climate problems is to stop taking fossil fuels out of the ground. That's really at the heart of it. We can call for conservation, we can call for reduced use, we can call for cars that consume less gas than the ones that we have now. And that'll help a little bit, but it's not going to really change things.
Right.
To change things, you have to stop taking the coal out of the ground, you've got to stop taking the oil, and the tar sands are the worst form of oil that the planet has. It's the dirtiest oil around. Produces three times the emissions, four times the emissions that oil, conventional oil, is producing.
What is the alternative that you could suggest to people?
The alternative is curtailment. We have to back off.
Well, people need energy. What would you suggest? I mean, people keep saying, we'll freeze in the dark. We don't, you know, how are we going to change our oil and gas furnaces over? How are we going to commute?
I don't think one needs to give up their job. I think there's lots of opportunities for employment. What we've done generally in this economy is we've taken jobs away from people through technological change. And we're seeing that here in Hamilton. We're seeing it across the continent and around the world, where employment is rising because we've come up with ways of reducing the amount of labor that's required to produce something. I don't see any particular gain in that. That simply means that we've got a large number of people unemployed and we're using more materials. Most of those technological changes actually involve consuming more of the planet. And it would be far better if we were doing labor in the way that we did it in the past, or in a similar way where we spent more time on that. We put more of our economy was focused around labor itself rather than the materials that are being consumed.
People living in poverty are going to feel effects even more with climate change, because climate change is bringing us more torrential downpours. It's also bringing us drought, which means we need more fresh water, and we're running out. We're running out for a number of reasons. Drought is just one of them. Also, because there is too much water coming down in a rainfall, it overwhelms the infrastructure. In the United States and Canada, most of the infrastructure is 80 to 100 years old. A lot of it has been overlooked in favor of expressways in our city in Hamilton, residential development, and pipeline development. Infrastructure has always been buck passed on down to lower levels of government. We found this in Hamilton every time there's a thunderstorm in the summer. Certain low-lying areas are overwhelmed. There's too much water rushing too fast, and the sewer system is too old to take care of all this excess water. That also corrupts and floods our drinking water, fouled, polluted by over-surface running water that picks up tar, oil, anything in its path before it ends up in Lake Ontario. This is happening all over North America. We aren't exclusive in Hamilton. Insurance companies are refusing to honor homeowners that have had flood insurance coverage once before. Insurance companies are in the business to make money. If everybody is applying for flood rebates once or twice a year, then the insurance companies are going to start to refuse customers. The people that pay the most are those that live in poverty once again. Here's a clip from another documentary that talks about infrastructure in America.
We have a huge infrastructure problem in this country. There are between 250,000 and 300,000 water main breaks a year.
In some cases, that has created these massive sinkholes that have swallowed trucks and cars. We are living on borrowed time as far as our infrastructure is concerned. For most of America, the water and sewer infrastructure goes back decades, if not more than a century. We have 72,000 miles of pipe and water main that is over 80 years of age. And in some communities, this is brick or even wood. Most of the water infrastructure to this point has been in good enough shape that people take it for granted, and then they end up doing things like purchasing bottled water. They deal with Band-Aids rather than a systematic effort to try and clean up our rivers, provide supply, and be able to deal with the future. During the Carter administration, 78% of the clean water resources were provided by the federal government. Last year, it was about 3%. Less money, less oversight, less attention. It's a ticking time bomb.
Because the government has cut so much of the infrastructure budget, many have argued that we should let private companies come in to fix the problem.
That's an argument for the government to invest in public infrastructure. It's not an argument to privatize water systems. I mean, government has certain purposes that are fundamental to the practical aspirations of people. Government has an obligation to make sure that there's air fit to breathe, water fit to drink, and a public purpose of government is confirmed through government protecting people's right to have access to water. Water is a basic human right. It's necessary for the survival of life on the planet. When you start commodifying the necessities of life in such a way as to make it more difficult for people to gain access to those necessities, you have the basis for serious political instability.
As Mark Twain once said, you know, whiskey is for sipping and water is for fighting. And there's going to be a lot of fighting about this before it's done.
When you think about the finished product of a plastic bottle, you don't think about the process.
Most of the public does not know that their plastic materials are being made in petrochemical plants.
People think when they're drinking bottled water that they're getting a healthy product. They're not conditioned to think, well, maybe there's something in the plastic.
That one person at the FDA was responsible for overseeing all of the regulation of bottled water in the country.
Are you that one person?
I do spend some of my time on bottled water, but I have other responsibilities as well.
We don't consider tap water to be an enemy. We don't.
Can people typically perceive a difference in taste?
I can tell the difference in many bottled waters, just as I can tell the difference between tap water and other beverages.
You can.
Absolutely.
You know, you're under oath, but you're...
Absolutely.
You know, we'll give your tongue an exemption.
Well, first of all, we should realize that a lot of bottled water is tap water.
Yeah, what do you mean? I thought that they came from, like, the mountains and the streams and the springs of Maine.
That's what they would have us believe.
Bottled water is the greatest advertising and marketing trick of all time. Money.
There are all sorts of ecological problems. We use approximately 18 million barrels of oil to transport water, and it's growing every year.
It's as if we're a bulimic society. We've been binging on petroleum. We've been packaging everything in plastic. And now we're running out of resources.
In a time when we're looking at climate change, why are we shipping water around the world?
If you eliminate the scourge of bottled water, you'll be eliminating one of the biggest problems facing our environment.
And the fake plastic girl.
There's plastic everywhere in the ocean. There's 9 million football fields of area. About as big as Texas, 3.5 million tons of plastic out there, all absorbing pollutants, animals consuming it, up the food chain to the food that you and I eat.
We want to drink the purest water that we can get. Now, why would you put that water into a substance which has the potential to leach chemicals into that water?
10 brands that we tested contained everything from radioactive materials to arsenic and industrial solvents, chemicals that leach out of the plastic itself.
You're talking about virtually no testing, and people have just assumed that what we're getting is safe.
Something causes a lot of these neighbors around here to be sick.
When people buy bottled water, they are contributing to the toxic exposures that people here are suffering with.
We don't have a chance. We do not have a possible chance.
And one day we'll see the light.
Bisphenol A may be one of the most potent toxic chemicals known to man.
We don't have BPA in our product.
None of your products?
Correct.
What about the 5-gallon jugs?
I'm not sure about those.
Bisphenol A is an industrial chemical that's in a big 5-gallon jugs.
My concern is that the FDA doesn't want us to ask about BPA because of the current investigation.
That's not true.
Can you talk about it now?
No. If I had known you were going to talk about that, probably wouldn't have given you the interview.
What's happening here in Freiburg is really a microcosm for what's happening all around the world.
Nestle, in the 10 years that they have been operating in this community, has torn the fabulous community apart.
It's all about the control and ownership of water. It is not something where you can just sit back and hope that your elected representatives will always do the right thing.
When we drink bottled water, we're telling our leaders that we don't care about the system.
Well, this government's not doing anything. I mean, this government's for sale. And so everything's ready to be auctioned off, including the public's right to water. Water is a basic human right.
Everybody drinks water every day.
It's necessary for the survival of life on the planet.
The whole place is co-op.
When you start commodifying the necessities of life in such a way as to make it more difficult for people to gain access to those necessities, you have the basis for serious political instability.
We are the children of Revolutionary War soldiers, and we are not going to give this up without a fight.
We won't let corporations come into our community, take our water.
We are not giving it up without a fight.
Water is really the next empire.
Most people don't think about where their water comes from. They just turn on the tap and they expect it to be there. Those days are ending. Humans are changing the climate. We already see evidence about it. One of the most significant impacts of climate change will be on our water resources.
This notion that we'll have water forever is wrong.
The world is running out of fresh water.
In the last 10 years, major water companies from Europe have started taking advantage of pollution and scarcity. Who owns water? Who gets to make the decisions about water?
Water privatization was forced on Bolivia by the World Bank.
Water is the most precious commodity for them in the world. It's blue gold.
Water is a common resource. Water is not a property.
The water sector is going to grow at 2 to 3 times the global economy over the next 20 years.
The market is amoral, and it's going to lead you to selling to those who can buy it and not to those who need it.
They're spending tens of millions of dollars to convince us that bottled water is better than tap water.
There is less than one person regulating the entire bottled water industry. People buying this stuff had no idea where it was coming from.
The company kept pumping during a season of drought.
They took so much water, they're being sued in 5 states.
They kept pumping even then.
We're fighting this battle, this David and Goliath battle.
Water must be protected everywhere.
Who owns the water for survival owns you. And that's the picture that people have to understand.
It's not a Democratic issue and it's not a Republican issue. It's a people issue.
Without water, we have no society. We have no economy. We have no life.
People say that, well, water's a lot like air. You shouldn't charge for water. Well, okay, watch what happens.
Most of our information comes from documentaries and grassroots media. As we heard at the beginning of the show with Katrina, that infrastructure was let go, the levees were ignored, and was waiting for the perfect storm, and the poor were the ones that paid for it. As we heard also when we went into the Labor Day parade in Hamilton, Ontario, different viewpoints about what our society has become and where the jobs have gone and what's wrong with the way we live. The union rep told us about the number of Canadian jobs that have gone to the States. They're still taking oil and water from Canada, but it's being piped into the United States, and it's American workers that are getting those jobs, and it is the Americans that are profiting from Canadian resources. Then we heard from the college media professor who said he didn't know where his students were going to go with an education he was giving them. They were well educated. There just wasn't any media anymore. We heard how it is the arts community that is trying to change things, try to make people more aware of what's going on in society. We also heard how different environmental groups are now marching in Labor Day parades, talking seriously about climate change. A lot of the mainstream media in Canada has been cut back. Most of it is corporate-driven and corporate-owned. A lot of local TV stations were closed. Here in Hamilton, we waited for some time to see if our one and only TV station was going to be taken off the air. A lot of things were changing. One thing was constant. We weren't getting good local grassroots news. If it wasn't for documentaries coming down off the internet and grassroots groups posting information up to the internet, most of us wouldn't know anything about the pipelines, or the shortage of water, or what happens to the jobs. And maybe that's how corporate America likes it. Maybe that's how they want it to be. How many know about the superhighway, the SPP highway? Keeps getting dropped off the radar. It hasn't gone away. It's still there. They're still building this huge 8-lane highway up the middle of the United States. If you go to my webpage, www.oside.ca, and I haven't been attacked by a recent troll, you can just click on to the oil company's own webpages to find out where the pipelines are, where the proposed ones are, where it's heading, where it's been. If you go to the NASCO site, you'll find out about that superhighway. There'll be more conversations coming up on this show on the superhighway. In fact, Council of Canadians has talked about it consistently. The Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives publishes a monitor. They're also on the web, and they talk about the superhighway. Why have this main highway go up the middle of North America? Well, it's for all the same reasons we've been listening to on this show. As the Arctic ice melts and the sea rises, the coastal lands are going to become more and more threatened. People will have to run inland to save themselves. Is the United States getting ready for the climate refugees? Are they protecting themselves from what's coming by running all these pipelines with resources from Canada and up from South America and Mexico so that the United States will be safe in having enough fuel, fossil fuel, to keep burning, to keep adding CO2, and to keep perpetuating this cycle that has become suicide economics? If those with the finances in the United States can pull their energy systems and their water from other sources and protect it, as some have said, if it comes to water between Canada and the United States, it's the United States that will win, then we're facing a very serious problem, and we need to find out what to do about it. There is an action group on the web called 350. We're going to hear more about that. That's something that Don McLean from Environment Hamilton alluded to. They're trying to get politicians, when they meet at the Global Summit in Copenhagen in December, to understand what it means to be above 350 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere and how it's already changed our climate. 350 is a global movement. They also do climate radio, and we're going to start hearing some of their stories and news items on this show. You've been listening to The Other Side of the News on 93.3 CFMU FM.